So in our series on working with judgmental mind, I think gratitude is actually a very important counterbalance. And so I titled the talk, "What If You Were in Heaven Already But Just Hadn't Noticed?" That would sure be a shame, wouldn't it? And in terms of judging mind, it's like we choose ourselves into hell all the time. So why not shift and choose ourselves into heaven? I mean, you know, we might as well with this one life we have. I mean, so I reviewed last week. I just love this very simple frame that the Buddha put around practices. Called the Four Wise Efforts. And so we're doing a lot of practices and working with judging mind within the Four Wise Efforts. So there is the preventative practices that prevent unskillful states from arising. There are abandoning practices, I guess, things we can do to abandon an unskillful state when it's happening. The chief one being mindfulness, that we can actually really be with our experience rather than be in reaction to it, and then the energy can kind of dissipate on its own, as long as we're not buying in too hard to the stories that we're telling ourselves. Then there are practices that help skillful states arise, so that basically cultivate skillful states. And then there are practices that prolong, deepen skillful states that are already happening. So we did that last week with the soaking in the good. So tonight our focus is really on this third wise effort of cultivating skillful states that aren't here right now, so that we're cultivating. And gratitude is a big one, a very big one. A very skillful state. When we're in a place of gratitude, usually we're very happy. There's a huge link between saying thank you and feeling happy. So life possibly may be giving us already everything we need to be happy. Maybe. But it really depends on what we choose to do. Sometimes we just need to reframe what's happening. And there's a story that I like that Larry Rosenberg, Vipassana teacher in Boston, told about a student he was working with who was very unclear about her direction in life, and as he was talking to her, she, you know, he said, "Well, what do you think you really want to do?" And she said, "Well, I just want to serve. I want to serve people." And he said, "Okay, well, and so what are you doing right now?" She said, "Well, I'm a waitress." And so, you know, he was a little quizzical. And obviously she probably meant she wanted to serve people, you know, in some more profound way than, you know, merely nourishing them. But we sometimes just simply need to reframe and look at our lives as our lives are and really see what's working. You know, what is actually aligned with what we really want and maybe what isn't. And so gratitude is a practice if we're basically creating our own living hell with our judgmental mind. Gratitude is really the practice we really need to balance this out. We really need to actively be looking for the blessings in our lives and what is working and celebrating it and actually realizing that we're being given to in all the blessings that are in our lives are actually gifts. So thank you is the appropriate response. It's not just good manners. It's actually really a deep spiritual practice of helping ourselves cultivate these unarisen skillful states. So just very briefly, we're just going to do a little quick exercise. So if you would, just notice your breath. This will just be like a minute. So just notice your breath right now. And then if you would, expand your attention to notice whatever sensation is obvious in the rest of your body. If you would, expand your attention out to sound. Notice what sounds are happening. Then just check in with your mood, your emotional state. Deep states, extreme states of happiness or grief, or just kind of neutral states like calm or peace or everything in between. What's your mood right now? And then you may notice, are there any images associated with your mood? Okay, we'll just end that. Did you have the experience of something new coming to your attention that you didn't know was there? A sound or a sensation or an image or a mood? Did anyone have that experience? A couple of nods, a couple of not so muches. If you're sitting here and you're focused on my words, then that's the reality of the moment. If you're lost in thoughts about something that happened at work today, that's the reality of the moment. If you're kind of deeply embodied and focused mostly on sensations in, say, your sits bones, that's your reality right now. And so we, as our practice deepens, we get it more and more that reality is what we choose to pay attention to. If it's really not in our awareness, as far as we're concerned, it's not really happening. So reality is what we choose to pay attention to. So we can walk into a park and we can notice nothing but the dog poop, or we can notice the beautiful flowers, or we can notice, you know, the laughter of kids playing. Whatever we notice is what's real for us at that moment. And so reality is a choice, and how we live our lives has a tremendous amount of selecting. We're choosing what to focus on. And when we choose what to focus on, that becomes our reality. And so if we have evolutionarily, by being human, a negativity bias in our brain, if culturally, as being industrialized people, we have a deeper bias towards being hard on ourselves, and if we have a personal history, a family history that also helped us be really hard on ourselves. We are habitually choosing a reality that's very negative. And our judgmental mind is the biggest, you know, piece of that. So it makes complete sense then, doesn't it, to actually balance that out and choose to focus on what's working, to choose to focus on the positive. It isn't Pollyanna reality light to focus on what's positive. It's actually very deep. Our Buddha nature is our deepest reality, that who we really are is ease and love and well-being. And it takes a lot of energy to be out of our Buddha nature. It takes energy to suffer. To keep our judging mind going again and again and again and again and again. Just, you know, that annoying announcer of our lives that's sort of monitoring our every move. That takes a lot of energy. Our Buddha nature is just who we are when we're fully relaxed, when we are not struggling, when we're not efforting, when we are simply witnessing and being. And who we are when we're most fully relaxed is not rant. Who we are is like, nice. Yes. There is so much goodness. There are so many simple pleasures. There's so much ability to just be at ease and feel kind of in harmony and in sync with things. If we're willing to relax. And so our practice is all about mentally relaxing, about giving up the struggle, the argument against reality, and simply noticing what is, dancing with what is, being with what is. And that really backs us into relaxing. And that relaxes the inner critic. So the inner critic is really, it takes a lot of energy. And I also think of it as really sacrilegious, our inner critic. That we take the vastness and complexity and mystery and miraculousness of the universe and all boil it down into, like, I'm no good, or you're selfish, or whatever. It's sacrilegious to boil all of it down to some really kind of thought. It just obliterates the whole, like, vast fabric of life. So if it was in Christian terms, we could just say, oh, we're just judging God's creation, you know, when we're judging. Who are we to do that? So we choose our reality. Our thoughts have a huge impact. And our thoughts create our reality. They become self-fulfilling prophecies. And to quote the great non-Buddhist titan of industry, Henry Ford, he said, whether you think that you can or that you can't, you're usually right. Right? We create it. So I just saw all these good little gratitude nuggets from BeliefNet. The Hausa tribe in Nigeria say, give thanks for a little and you will find a lot. Rumi says, giving thanks for abundance is sweeter than the abundance itself. Meister Eckhart said, if the only prayer you said in your whole life was thank you, that would suffice. Cahil Gibran said, wake at dawn with a winged heart and give thanks for another day of loving. Can you imagine that, starting every day with that prayer? Wow, I woke up. I've been given another day. Another day to love. Nice. thank you. So, not to mention the fact that one day we just woke up from the big sleep and were born and were given a life. I mean, isn't that like just the most ridiculous miracle of all? That we just, poof, we're born, we're alive. Our moms did all that incredibly difficult, painful work of being pregnant and birthing us and nursing us and losing their sleep. Basically being the human sacrifice zone for our needs so we could like clamber and crawl and scream and burp and, you know, shit our way into life. Isn't it amazing? I mean, it's just, we're all alive. Okay, like, this is fantastic. We all got that gift. So from that perspective, everything's a gift because it means we're alive. You know, if you're grieving, you're alive. If you're loving, you're alive. I mean, it's really, we just need to take time to remember these things. So I really like this writing from a Zen priest, Edo Taisha Mano. He writes, "People often ask me how Buddhists answer the question, does God exist?" He's going to give you a very Zen response. Of course it's not yes or no. He writes, "The other day I was walking along the river. The wind was blowing. Suddenly I thought, oh, the air really exists. We know that the air is there, but unless the wind blows against our face, we are not aware of it. Here in the wind, I was suddenly aware, yes, it's really there. And the sun, too. I was suddenly aware of the sun shining through the bare trees, its warmth, its brightness, and all this completely free, completely gratuitous, simply there for us to enjoy. And without knowing it, completely spontaneously, my two hands came together, and I realized that I was making gassho. And it occurred to me that this is all that matters, that we can bow, take a deep bow, just that, just that." That's the Zen answer. Is there a God? So gratitude is often about just waking up to the simplest things and realizing that they can really make us happy. But we have to notice. We have to stop and we have to notice. And it seems like our culture is working desperately, furiously, to get us not to notice, to just be so multitasky about so much, so many complex things, so much of it happening at once. How can we possibly notice, you know, the air and the sunshine when we're doing so much? And it's not like we can't do this, but we definitely need breaks. We definitely need to slow down and just enjoy. And then we see that life is just presenting us with miracles all over the place. So I'll read a poem about that. It's called Fueled by Marcy Hans. Fueled by a million man-made wings of fire, the rocket tore a tunnel through the sky, and everybody cheered. Fueled only by a thought from God, the seedling urged its way through the thickness of black, and as it pierced the heavy ceiling of the soil and launched itself up into outer space, no one even clapped. I used to love working with kids, because kids would get it. Kids could literally appreciate and understand the miracle of a seed being bathed in the universe, in the sun, soil, water, air, and, you know, launching itself into outer space from the ground, right? I mean, we children know this sense of wonder, and it's so easy to lose that as adults in our chaotic, busy lives. It's like Thomas Merton said, speed is a kind of violence. And it's really a violence against our noticing and being nourished by the simple pleasures. And then doing our gassho, our bow of thank you. You're not going to say thank you if you're speeding past it all. So, that's my gratitude pep talk. So now I'd like to guide us in maybe a 10-minute or so contemplation of the blessings of the universe. So this will be kind of a contemplation meditation. Beginning with whatever way you want to do this, just thank the fact that you're alive. That, wow, I've been given the greatest gift that I could possibly get, the gift of this very life. This gift given to us for free, completely gratuitously. The gift of life every single day, every single breath. The gift of life moving through us. Just acknowledging this. Being thankful. And if we turn our attention to this body, one of the gifts of our life, this amazing organism that's taking care of us every single day of our lives, this body telling us it's time to sleep when rest is needed, it's time to stop eating when we're full. It's time to breathe. It's time to move. If you would, just feeling your pulse on your wrist, your neck, wherever it's obvious to you. Either side of your Adam's apple is often very strong. You can directly feel this life force beating away. The heart doing this for free, supporting our life completely without stopping from the moment of birth, the moment of conception probably. Just saying thank you to your heart for sustaining you in whatever way that makes sense to you. branching out to acknowledge all the other things our body does to support our life, blood flowing, leaving the heart, returning to the heart, the breath breathing, stomach digesting, liver purifying, intestines further digesting, the literally trillions of cells without our bidding, without our asking, working just doggedly to preserve and nourish our life. Isn't it amazing? Our candle was lit, and the body just has been doing the rest ever since. Our hair growing, our fingernails growing, our ears hearing, all of this happening automatically. Realizing the tremendous gift of body. Part of our body is our brain, also a miraculous giver of care. Our brain being able to think, associate, remember, plan, helping us live our lives. Isn't it amazing that we've been given this gift too? Branching out to consider that the very thoughts you're thinking right now are possible because of the food you ate. That food is literally converted by your body into the very thoughts you're thinking right now. And what is that food other than the soil, water, air, sun that the plants took in, maybe the animals ate, or maybe just directly the plants that we ate. Literally, the universe is thinking your thoughts right now. Can we bow down? Can we gusho in thankfulness that we are not alone? We are actually the product of the entire universe. Can we feel this deep interdependence that is us? On a more personal level, consider all the things that have been done for you, the effort of your parents, teachers, coaches, friends, just reflecting on all the care that has come your way from day one. This is not to deny the difficult things. Of course, we know those too. Even our difficulty is a way of the universe caring for us, We feel pain in our body so that we avoid harming it. Our mental pain often is a way of being cared for. And then more directly, just think today of all the ways that people have cared for you, just through attention. You could think of the workers that made your car or your bicycle or the bus, the workers that paved the roads, that built this building. The universe is providing a bounty for us, all for free. We didn't ask, it's just being done. Isn't it amazing? All the beauty of nature put there for free. The very oxygen we breathe, put here 2 billion years ago by bacteria that learned to excrete oxygen and fill the atmosphere with oxygen that wasn't there before. We're literally breathing in their work 2 billion years ago. We are caught in a vast network of care. Maybe the only appropriate response is thank you, gassho. Deep bow. So, the Buddha said that contentment is the greatest wealth. Not exactly the motto of our culture. Not seeing that practiced all the time in our media celebrities. but gratitude is a profound spiritual practice in helping us be content. The more we can just notice the simple blessings, the ordinary miraculousness of life, the more content we are. And even when life is really difficult, we can notice all the ways the universe is still supporting us. And so the practice of gratitude is a deep, deep spiritual practice with great fruits, and it greatly contradicts our judging mind. It's like the opposite of our miserly negative brain that instead of saying thank you is saying yuck. here's a life where gratitude just leads to tremendous generosity. This was a year and a half ago in Nova Scotia. The phone hasn't stopped ringing at Alan and Violet Large's home in Lower Truro, Nova Scotia, since news spread that the elderly couple has given away almost all of their $11.2 million lottery win. In July, the Large's put over $11 million in the bank after winning the Lotto 649. Now they have made good on a promise to help others, giving most of their winnings to local charities. The elderly couple still lives in their 147-year-old home, and there are no new cars in the garage or large televisions in the living room. Major contentment. The largest said Wednesday that they haven't spent any of the money on themselves. The couple, who have been married for 36 years, gave some of their winnings to family members, but the lion's share was hand-delivered to charities and other organizations. Nothing, Violet Large told CBC News. We haven't bought one thing. That's because there's nothing that we need. Alan Large, a retired welder, said he and his wife are quite happy with what they've got. You can't buy happiness, he said. Violet, 78, is just getting over surgery and 6 chemotherapy treatments for cancer. But it hasn't changed her outlook on life. It could be worse because I'm not bedfast and I haven't been sick to my stomach, so I'm very fortunate. Wow. She says, I may not be able to get up and dance. I may not be able to get up and swing to the Highland Fling. But I'm quite happy and coming along every day. I'm feeling a little bit better every day. What more do you want? So, imagine being that way with your 6 chemotherapy treatments. Just, you know, really being grateful for what she has. And that gratitude, you know, you get a sense of really probably a lifetime practice of gratitude. Then they could just give away $11 million. They did keep a little bit for emergencies. And by the way, it's Canada, so they're, you know, they don't have to pay for their health insurance. I mean, that would be sort of up there on my list. It's like, maybe a little bit, a couple of million for my medical emergencies would be nice. But, so. Now, so the trick would be when our gratitude practice was strong enough that we could be grateful even for the difficulty. Now, that would be obviously very advanced. This sucks. Thank you. You know, that would be cool, huh? I mean, pretty much if we could do that, problem solved. Life would pretty much be okay. The good stuff, we'll just be thankful for that. The bad stuff, wow, thank you for that too. Is that possible? I just want to say a little bit about that. And I want to read one of the most famous poems in Japan from Ryokan, who was a revered kind of crazy wisdom Zen monk in the 18th century. And he was given the abbotship of a monastery, but he didn't want it. He basically ended up becoming kind of a wandering beggar monk. And he lived in a little hut. And he loved playing with kids. He was sort of like, in a sense, the village fool, but also deeply wise. And he was a teacher for everyone around him. So once while he was, you know, in town, away from his hut, a thief came along and stole everything he had, which wasn't much. And when he returned, the thief was just leaving, and Ryokan saw that there was one possession that had been left behind. And so Ryokan picked up his meditation cushion and ran after the thief and gave it to him. And later he wrote this poem. The thief left it behind, the moon in my window. I personally that just makes me so happy, that little haiku. Can you imagine responding that way? Your practice is so deep, your joy is so deep, you know, that the moon in the window was just going to be enough for you. You know, he didn't take everything. So what's good about difficulty? Well, it can be very creative. Our mistakes, when we get it wrong, like in jazz, there's no such thing as a mistake. There's just a note that's early. And then, you know, the band resolves it with the next chord. Or the soloist resolves it with the next chord. Very creative they can be, our mistakes. We learn a lot. We may grow. We may end up going in completely different directions because of our mistakes. So the Washington Post did a contest where you take a word and you change one letter to make a new word. So basically a mistake. So the word so people submitted their efforts. So one person submitted reincarnation, coming back to life as a hillbilly. Intoxication, the euphoria at getting a refund from the IRS, which lasts until you realize it was your money to start with. Foreploy, any misrepresentation about yourself for the purpose of obtaining sex. Karmageddon, it's like when everybody's sending off all these really cool vibes, right? And then, like, the earth explodes and it's a serious bummer. So our difficulties can really take us to new places. We can get very creative, maybe. One example of that is something I read from Alice Walker, who she was blinded in one eye by her brother, who shot her with an air rifle when she was 8. So she writes about this. "We are playing cowboys and Indians, and because I was a girl, I was an Indian," she recalls. "I was standing on top of a makeshift garage made of corrugated tin when the pellet hit me. It was a blinding, massive sting. Only later did it really hurt. Help was delayed because Curtis tried to get her to lie about the accident. By the time the truth came out, it was too late to save the sight in that eye. I remember sitting on the porch, watching the blood cover the tree I was looking at. That's the last thing I saw out of my right eye." Wow. "The accident turned out to be a blessing," says Walker, now 67. "While recovering at home, she spent a lot of time reading, devouring words with her good eye, ended up getting a scholarship to college. I got an education," she says. "Curtis became a gangster. He shot people, used cocaine, and died before I had a chance to thank him. I survived, and I would have died if I'd stayed there." You just never know, do you, right? So our difficulties make us turn left. And by definition, if we turn left, we're going to go to someplace new. So, but we just don't usually know it, right? We're just, you know, we thought we were going this way and now we're going that way and we don't like it. But later we realize, wow, yeah, that, if you look back on a lot of the changes that you've made for the good, probably a lot of it was started with difficulty. So, all right. Am I getting there with you?
I have a client that lost her fire in the 4 mile fire, and she's very grateful that she didn't have to move again, or, you know, have to sort through all her things. I'm having to move,
right?
And I'm just overwhelmed with.
Right.
Meditating over every object.
Right.
And she said, I'm clear from that.
Right. She had a fire sale, so to speak.
Yeah, so to speak. So that was, it was a lot of people feel it was a tragedy, but she was grateful for that tragedy.
I bet we all have those in our lives, where we really can look back and be thankful for the suffering that led us to some kind of growth, getting bigger, really, in our hearts. I think I can say, I mean, my own sort of personal story around that is, which I think I said in one of the classes, since self-judgment is our topic, that was, of course, a big specialty of mine in my kind of high school, college years, and I was really unhappy. And I found a therapist in my senior year in college who pretty much saved my life. And, I mean, I was going through the motions. I was sort of looking good on the surface, but down deep, I was really not a happy camper. And in some ways, I didn't even quite know it. I mean, I knew it because I was looking for something, but I really didn't know how unhappy I was. Then my therapist just right away, she said, "You're so unhappy." And it was like, I'm like, "You're right." And I just remember my first session with her just crying for like 45 minutes. But it absolutely changed my life to have someone get me so deeply and clearly as no one had done in my life before that. And I really do think psychically she saved my life. And it eventually led me to Dharma practice. And the thing that was making me so unhappy was how hard I was being on myself, my inner critic just, you know, raging. In some ways, I didn't even know how strong that was until I started getting into Buddhist practice and going on retreat, especially after a girlfriend broke up with me, was like excruciating. It was basically like dying to sit there for a week with all of that heartbreak and all of my inner critic pounding away at me. But, you know, I had to go back for more. I had to go back to retreat and more and more and more. And it was my suffering that led me to the Dharma, and my suffering that led me beyond the inner critic and the depression and all of that for me, just a much more reliable, much more easy happiness. And, you know, I'm still working, as are we all, but all of my neurotic stuff just doesn't bug me. It's like big deal, you know, big deal. Inner critic, big deal, whatever. Thanks for sharing, you know, for the 10,000th time today, you know, just give it a rest. But, you know, this is the thing. Our suffering really does make us dig deep. Now, the Buddha said that suffering is not enough. We need joy, too. And the human realm is supposedly the only realm where there's enough joy and enough difficulty to be motivated for enlightenment, for awakening. Only humans can awaken, apparently. So what this Buddhist teacher, Tibetan Buddhist teacher of the Dalai Lama, Geshe Gyaltsen, said once, think of your suffering. On a retreat I was on with him, think of your suffering as a miracle performed by the Buddhas to get you to practice. So that, just for me personally, you know, I would have never, ever been this devoted to practice if I didn't suffer a lot. And I'm actually really thankful for that. And, you know, in some ways, I'm a lot more mindful when I'm in difficulty. You may notice this pattern in yourself. And if I'm being mindful, I'm good with that. And so I would actually take the difficulty if it was making me more mindful. I really could actually say thank you. So that's kind of a, you know, high bar. But just check this out in your life. When things are hard, notice the way it makes you draw deep on your strengths and makes you get your priorities straight and makes you really practice self-care. You know, it really makes us dig deep. And it really leads us to the question, what really matters? I have this amazing gift of life. What am I doing with it? And is that aligned? Am I doing what I most deeply want? So I will stop right there and just invite your input. And then we'll do some further gratitude practice. Yes.
Can I just do some gratitude?
Sure.
For those of you who were here last week, I shared a difficulty that I was going through, and pretty much on my own for like the last 20 months, and I was really overwhelmed by the support and the support that you guys showered on me. And I have to report, I think they put carpet padding upstairs.
Oh!
And I was so busy, I wanted to get home and just, make a note and put it up there because I didn't want to inject it. Because a lot of you who weren't there don't know what it was, but I am pretty sure it is your energy that pushed it over the top. So I want to thank you.
After 20 months. Wow. Wow. Gosh, oh. Well, and just gratitude to you for bringing it up and, it provided a lot of fodder for us. So.
No, it's bigger on my part than you.
Yeah. Anything. Gratitude stories, questions. It can be just any old Dharma question, anything at all. Otherwise, you're going to have to practice. You've got lots of time, uncharacteristically. See, that got you guys.
No, going. I was trying to find a practice. But when you were talking earlier about the power of gratitude and took us through the guided gratitude meditation, I noticed that there are some things that I am tremendously grateful for that I feel overly attached to, or the theme of attachment comes up, wanting to hold on to them, not have them change or go away. And I wondered if you could speak.
That's a good one. I'll paraphrase from Neruda, who's basically said, our job, we have two jobs. Our job is to love, and our job is to let go. The universe is asking us resolutely to do both things. Now, he said poetically, it was my destiny to love and say goodbye. Now, that sounds like, oh, what a bummer. But actually, it's completely aligned with reality, because things come, they're here for a while, and then they go. So we have to love, and then we have to say goodbye. And so we can be deeply grateful for the flaring of the thing that we're attached to, recognizing the lawfulness of its being slippery. And actually, it's the very slipperiness that makes it that much more beautiful, right? We don't extol midday that lasts, many hours. We extol the sunset. It's the very fleetingness that makes it precious. So this is the trick, how to love deeply but not be fooled by the true nature of things. The true nature of everything is to come together and last a little while and fall apart. And we can actually love that, because the Buddha said to be in harmony with this truth is the deepest happiness. That slipperiness is the very pointer towards your true happiness, because it means you have to let go. And when we let go, we taste that deep natural peace that isn't out there in the things we're trying to grab that are fleeting. It's here, and it's always here, right here. So that very slipperiness, as painful as it is a huge invitation for you to go to your spiritual depth. So... And this, it's easy to be like, you know, it's all good, it's all sort of out there, and I'm just this detached kind of ninny. That's not letting go. Letting go is loving deeply and knowing the thing I'm loving is nothing but flow. My child, you know, my dog, my beautiful meditation, that gorgeous sunset is nothing but flow. And if I'm going to really love myself, I need to be very wise about that so that I can love this flowing thing as it flows. Oh, now we're at our meditation time. I'm sorry, both of you, but this was my commitment to the group last week, is that we are definitely going to do this resource meditation, so apologies. Okay. So maybe just if you would, just maybe you want a short stretch break, because we'll do like a 20-minute practice now. So we'll just take a quick minute. Please don't leave, because then that'll... I mean, leave the room for a bathroom break. Okay. Did anyone find a pair of glasses last week? Yeah, I think someone would have said something to me. You should maybe check with the Y to see if someone turned into them.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know if it's here, so I'm just checking the road.
So this is a meditation where I'm going to invite you to focus again on and again on what's good in your life. You're going to essentially populate where you're at with all the good in your life. And you, as if your mind gets distracted, just gently return to focusing on the blessings as your meditation object, just the way you would return to noticing the breath. The trick is to focus on all the blessings, but also not try to force yourself to feel something. Make your job pretty much be to just notice the blessings, have them all around you, and then come back when you notice you're distracted. And the rest you can't really control. And that'll help you not strive or strain in the practice. So beginning by letting yourself go and your imagination to a natural place, a place of beauty that you feel connected to, grateful towards. And it can be anywhere, doesn't have to be currently in your life. can be a place you've connected to deeply in your past. In a relaxed way, let yourself inhabit this place. Notice where you want to be. Do you want to be sitting, standing? Notice what you can be grateful for right there, the sun, sky, plants, earth, your body, your heart and mind. And then start by inviting in to your space a person in your life that you're grateful for. Someone you know now or have known, doesn't really matter. Just whoever pops up, just let them come and be with you. If you would, just thank them for what you feel they give you or have given you. And imagine the person just receiving it in this loving, attentive way, just being with you. If your mind is wandering off to anything other than this natural place of beauty, this person that you're grateful towards, then just bring yourself back. Meditating on this person and this place that you're in. You may just glance around and notice what you see. Notice what sounds might be in this place. Smells. And any body experiences. How's your body doing, imagining this place? And then just let yourself, in your own rhythm, just populate this scene with all the people in your life that you're grateful, you are grateful towards. Parents, relatives, kids, pets, teachers, friends, world figures, anybody at all that inspires you. You may want to, in your own way, just thank each and every one of them. Thank you for the gift of your attention, your care, your love, your friendship, your support, your guidance, whatever it is. Thanking each and every being. alive or dead, not really very important. Even the beings that are no longer around are still with us. We still have their gifts in our heart. Opening to those gifts. And saying thank you. If at any point it feels like, wow, there's so much and it's almost too much or a lot, you could come back to your original person and just keep feeling the goodness of them being in your life or having been in your life. And then that simple recognition of goodness can stand for all of it. You can kind of have the whole crowd, but you could relate more simply to one person, if that's helpful. Then you may focus on what you're grateful for, or what are the blessings in your own inner self. What do you appreciate about yourself? It might be your health. It might be your skill at certain things. It might be qualities about yourself you're grateful for. What are the blessings of you? Focusing on those, if any shortcomings come up, you just notice that and come back to focusing on your own inner blessings. Could be your connection with meditation practice or prayer. Anything at all. Any blessing inside your own heart. And then you may focus on activities, things you like to do that you're grateful for, that are blessings. Hiking, swimming, biking, whatever. Music, art. All these things you like to do. Making love. Being intimate with your sweetie. All the blessings in your activities. Letting them, in a way, come into this scene. You can kind of visualize, symbolize them here with you as part of the blessings in this natural scene with all the people, with all your inner capabilities. Add your activities. And now, if you would, take all of this goodness in your life and imagine it dissolving around you into golden, warm light. And let all the light of these blessings in your life come into your heart. And imagine this light, golden warm light, radiating from your heart through your entire body. No cell left out. Every cell of your body filling with the golden warm light of these blessings. Visually imagine your body as light. It's no longer flesh. It's actually light. Just visualize that. And just relax and enjoy the goodness of the light. And if you get distracted, return to visualizing and feeling your body as warm golden light. All this goodness dissolved into you as light. You being light. And then just letting go of all of this. Just feeling the simple rise and fall of your breathing.